South Coast. Tim Weisberg here, along with science advisor Matt Moniz, here to talk about the paranormal, as we are each and every Saturday night. And tonight, well, we're gonna try something here on the program that we haven't done in a while. Something that we try to avoid a lot of the time. even though we've spent in the almost 15 years of doing this show. It'll be 15 years next month.
Yeah.
So 15 years, actually, literally a month from today will be our 15th anniversary. January 26th, 2006.
I shall bring the bubbly.
But in all that time, we have talked a lot about this one particular paranormal case. And
it keeps coming back.
Whenever we talk about it, it causes problems. We used to have a problem where every time we talked about it, everything would go haywire. I'm hoping that we've gone beyond that. That's a problem that goes beyond this.
Yeah, that started before.
You know, also celebrating its 15th anniversary this year is that headphone box.
Yeah.
So that's probably why it's giving. Actually, it's probably older than that. But the we avoided saying the word for a long time. We would just call it the A word, because every time that we would say Amityville on the air, we would have problems. And we have done a lot of shows on Amityville. We've looked at it from a lot of different angles. We've looked at it from a lot. We've had a lot of different guests on to talk about it. We have talked about it from the DeFeo perspective, the DeFeo murders that happened at 112 Ocean Avenue. We have talked about it from the Lutz perspective, the Lutz family moving in and being the ones who experienced what became known as the Amityville Horror. So we have looked at it from a variety of different angles. We've had people on that, you know, believed the Lutzes. We've had people on that didn't believe the Lutzes. We've had people on who have talked with and become close with Ronnie DeFeo, the Amityville murderer who is rotting away in prison for committing those murders. We have had people who have called in, and we've actually had a member of the Lutz family on. I mean, we have covered this inside and out from every possible angle, but there's always more conversation to be had about it. And I wasn't going to talk about it yet for a couple of reasons. One, because there's a new documentary coming out that I had the opportunity to see on a screener, and I'm not allowed to talk about it yet, to give a review of it yet. The information is embargoed until Monday, which means that we have to wait until Monday to publish my review, but you'll be able to read it on ultimateunexplained.com on Monday. But I'm going to talk around it a little bit tonight, because I was going to say, like, well, hold off. You know, I'm working with Discovery to try to get some people from the documentary to come on and be a guest and to talk about it. So I was like, well, we'll hold off on talking about it. But everything is just lining up too much for me not to talk about it tonight. So
I'm looking at the TV at the
moment. Well, let me start at the beginning. I'm going to give this a little chronology. Okay, everybody that listens to this program knows that Amityville is the case that I'm the most obsessed with. That it's the one place that I would want to investigate if I could. It's the one true paranormal story, and we can argue whether it's true or not, but the one, you know, supposedly true story that really kind of got me interested in the research end of the paranormal.
Yes, it's pretty much stated fact for the past 15 years.
Yeah. And what happened was, you know, I knew of the movie. I had seen the movie when I was a kid, and I didn't really take into account, like, the true story, you know, aspect of it much. But then I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, and I was at a flea market on Cape Cod, and I, you know, would go to flea markets and buy bags and boxes of paperback books. You know, my dad worked at the flea market. He had a table there selling auto parts. And because the company that he worked for was an auto parts company. So he would buy the surplus stock and go and sell it at the yard sale. And if I helped him out, he would give me a couple of bucks. So it was basically, you know, I could count on getting like a $5 bill every Sunday just for helping out, which is, you know, a lot of money to an 11 or 12 year old kid. And I bought a lot of comic books at a quarter a piece.
Yep.
Or I would buy a lot of paperbacks at a quarter a piece. And I just so happened to see sitting on a blanket, the Amityville Horror book. And I said, oh, I remember that. And it says, you know, the terrifying true story. I was like, oh, hold on, wait, what? So I picked up the book, I started thumbing through it, and I said, okay, I'm going to buy this. And I went back to the yard sale site, and I started flipping through and started reading the book. And next thing I know, I've completely read the book cover to cover just while I was sitting there that day. And so I read it two more times that week and just became totally obsessed with it. Now, there's no internet back then. You know, we're talking, this is like 1991, 92. So, well,
there was. It wasn't there.
Well, but there, I couldn't. Yeah. I didn't have access to it.
Right.
I had no way to really look anything up. You couldn't go. There's nothing you can go and look up in the right. library except the Amityville Horror book. But I just became kind of obsessed with it, and I would always get TV Guide. Well, I didn't get TV Guide. My grandmother did, and I would look through TV Guide every time she got it to see if it was going to be showing, you know, so I could watch it. And then finally, I did get to catch it at one point and record it on the VCR. But I just became obsessed with it, and it was something that definitely carried through when the internet came around and I could, like, look stuff up and all that stuff. So naturally it was going to become part of Spooky South Coast when we started doing this program, and it was something that I wanted to talk about. I didn't realize that it would have the effect that it had on the program, where it became... I don't want to over-dramatize this, and I don't want to sound like we're being... I don't want to make it sound like we're mocking anybody that has been under the true curse of anything paranormal, but I feel like it's been a bit of a curse for us. That it was notorious. If you go back and listen to those old episodes, it doesn't have to be the Amityville episodes either, but anytime anybody said that word, it would lead to problems. And we even went so far as to have the studio blessed. We've tried to avoid having any issues with it by not saying the word outright, but it seems to be something that happened again and again. And I think we put enough distance between ourselves and it happening. And I think the turning point actually came when we had Jackie Barrett on, because Jackie became the spiritual advisor to Ronnie DeFeo. And that was the night when she told me that Ronnie DeFeo had a message for me, mm-hmm. and that I should stop looking into the Amityville house because it was looking at me. So that was a freaky moment, but I think that kind of broke whatever it was. So ever since then, we haven't had a problem. I've mentioned it all the time on Midnight Society and never had an issue. So I think that we are in the clear to talk about it tonight. So then, that being said, as I mentioned, it's something that I talk about, and I've mentioned on Midnight Society that I am, you know, obsessed with that case. And one of my listeners, great guy, he said he wanted to send a little gift for, I think I had mentioned the Bradford Exchange having the Amityville, like, model. And so he emailed me and said, you know, because you've been our kind of go-to entertainment during this pandemic and everything, you know, as a token of thanks, this is coming your way. And very nice of him. He ordered the Amityville house. It's part of like Haunted Houses of America or something is the name of the series from the Bradford Exchange. They've only announced two so far. It's the Amityville house and Franklin Castle.
They need to include Lizzie's.
I think there's probably, you know, a plan to have it, but there's probably some licensing issues.
Got it.
So they put out this one and Franklin Castle, and it's been a while since they've announced anything else. Like, these were announced like 3 years ago, and I always thought about getting one, and I never ordered it. So thankfully Lynn was nice enough to order one, and he told me that it was coming. And the Bradford Exchange said that it wouldn't be here. Originally he ordered it like a couple months ago. And it should have only taken, like, what, like 6 to 8 weeks for delivery, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the Bradford Exchange sent him notification that it was, like, back ordered because, you know, the pandemic, they haven't been producing things as quickly.
Like everything else.
Right. So they said it was expected shipment June 2021. I was like, okay, you know, that's fine. I understand. So I was here doing the news, filling in for Mary, the news director when she was on vacation, and one of the DJs from Fun 107 walks in with a box. He says, "Here, this came for you." I was like, I'm not expecting any packages. And I open it up, and inside of it, it's the Amityville house from the Bradford Exchange. So it came sooner than expected, but I had no idea that it was coming. Okay, weird enough. Then I got an email from Discovery Channel, and they have a new streaming service coming out called Discovery Plus. And as part of this launch of Discovery Plus, they have a new Shock Doc special called, and I can talk about it coming out. I just can't give a review yet. So the Shock Doc special is called Amityville Horror House. Now, they had a very successful Shock Doc about the Warrens. I thought that was very well done, you know, very entertaining. Now they're putting out this Amityville one on their streaming service. The launch date for this to hit the streaming service is January 4th, 2021. Do you know what January 4th is?
We've been a couple of weeks from now.
But do you know what the significance of that date is? Monies, we've been friends for 15 years now. You don't know what January 4th is? It's my birthday. So the documentary on Amityville is coming out on my birthday. And I get this email announcing that. I was like, okay, now things are getting really weird. But I wasn't going to talk about it tonight when we came in, because I said, we better wait, because they're going to try and get us somebody from the documentary. And, you know, the review is embargoed till Monday, so I can talk more freely about it if we push it off to next week. You know, and that'll be previewing, you know, the entire, you know, we can really do the whole episode just about that without having to watch what we say. So I said, oh, yeah, well, just hold off on it. And then I came into the studio tonight. I had my dinner with me. And usually when I come in here before I set up everything, I put the TV on something to watch and I eat my dinner. You know, we have to eat it in this little square now. But I'm eating my dinner and I'm flipping through the channels. And what's on but Amityville 2? So I was like, okay. And think about this. It's not a movie that you see on the air quite often.
And Amity, either of them, actually, any of them anymore, yeah. Except during like Halloween.
But you don't expect to be flipping through the channels and
Christmas.
Finding.
Maybe, it's a good Christmas movie.
And if you are going to see one, you know, usually it's the original or the Ryan Reynolds remake.
Yeah.
You don't really get to see, you know, 2, 3, 4, or definitely not any of the direct-to-video ones. But I was like, okay, that's a sign. So we're going to talk about it. So that is the discussion for tonight. We're going to talk about the Amityville horror case. We're going to talk about, you know, some of the things that we believe about it, some of the things that we think we know about it, and we'll talk about kind of the effect that the story has had. I want to say, and you were alive during this time, Moniz. I was not. Yes. But you were young, so I don't know how much it was on your radar. But do you remember seeing newspaper articles about a haunted house prior to the Amityville case?
Directly related to that case? No.
No, but I mean, like, would you open up the newspaper and read an article about, you know, homeowners say house is haunted?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Okay. So when this came out, this went crazy. This story was, like, picked up internationally. Once the Lutzes came forward with their story, that kind of hit. I know the DeFeo murder was going to be, you know, obviously that's big news. When somebody kills their entire family, that's going to be big news.
Yes.
Especially prior to him being convicted of it, because there was so much dramatic stuff that went on with, you know, first him claiming that he had nothing to do with it, then him claiming that Butch DeFeo, Ronnie DeFeo, claimed that he was held at gunpoint by a mafia member, and that it was the mafia that killed his family, which, when you look at the way that they were killed, it was plausible at the time, for sure. Especially since, you know, Big Ronnie supposedly had ties to the mafia, and the mother's father was supposedly part of the mafia. So, you know, that's an understandable angle. And then, of course, he comes forward and admits to doing it, but then he admits to doing it because he was under some sort of possession, which is why Amityville 2 is called Amityville 2, The Possession. And then part of that story gets expanded when Hans Holzer conducts his investigation of the Amityville house and comes up with all of this, you know, through the medium, I think it was Ethel Johnson, comes up with all of the stuff that she comes up with about the Native American history and the colonists and there always being something evil on that site and all of that. So then you start to move in the evil spirits idea. And there's also been a lot of misinformation that's come out over the years about it, too.
Some of it from the movies, people taking pieces from the, you know, Hollywood out of it.
And I think that the people in the paranormal world today, you know, the paranormal investigators that are out there, might have a better understanding of how this works now, where the idea of based on a true story, because we've seen movies made of cases that we have investigated or of cases that are, you know, that were friends with the people who endured those cases. What was the haunting in Connecticut case? You know, everybody was friends with the people involved in that because she was such a big part of the paranormal world. And so they were quick to point out all those differences between what actually happened and what was portrayed in the movie. And the movie was kind of limited because they couldn't talk about the Warrens because there was already a development deal for the Warrens under something else, from my understanding.
And Conjuring, obviously.
And then, so I think that was kind of the big touchstone for people of this era of paranormal investigation to realize, like with the Conjuring case, that's like, this is how you should learn that the movie that gets made doesn't have to have anything to do with their actual true life story.
A good example I can take from the UFO one would be the story about Travis Walton, mm-hmm. Fire in the Sky.
I mean, that's another example of where, I mean, I know that there's a lot of elements in that story that are
everything
from the case.
That dealt with the way the other people were treated, you know, by law enforcement and, you know, is absolutely correct, pretty much verbatim. What happened with Travis on board what they show in the craft is complete Hollywood.
And I think that that probably has a lot to do with the same thing that I think happened with The Conjuring, where, and I have no proof of this is just my own speculation.
Yeah, that's why I'm making that analogy, yeah.
There was a script already that had to do with this subject matter, and they said, well, let's apply what's in that script to this story that we just bought and kind of cross-pollinate them and see what we can kind of come up with. And I think that like the Conjuring just feels to me like a haunted house movie that had been kicking around for a while. And then they just applied those elements to, you know, the Perrin story. So and it's probably the same thing with Fire in the Sky too, where, you know, there's a script out there for an abduction movie. But at the time, abduction movies wouldn't have been something that would have gotten made. Or if it did, it would have been something that was, you know, direct to video. It wouldn't have been a big Hollywood film. But then when you have this other story that you buy the rights to that is a true story, now you say, well, by putting based on a true story on it, now it's a bigger deal. And now we can take some of those elements that were in that script that we like and we can work it into it.
Well, I can say that definitely did happen with Travis. You know, I've known Travis for decades, and that's one of the things he said. Yeah, when they were doing my story, they were focusing on getting all of the stuff that happened to everybody here on Earth, as he says it, right. And it's like the experience that he had, it allowed them to do their own, you know, version of what they wanted to do.
And let's look at it a little bit from the perspective of the, you know, the film producers of that time. So we're talking the early 90s. Yeah. So it's before, you know,
decent CGI.
And it's before, like, a lot of this stuff was in the public eye. True. You know, so there stuff was out there, but it wasn't really until, like, The X-Files became popular that there was, you know, a more serious focus on it. But so they would have been looking at Travis's story as, well, we can verify all the stuff that did happen here on Earth because there's law enforcement involved, right. And there's a paper trail of it. Yeah, we can verify
records.
They would look at what happened on the ship as being like, well, we don't really think this guy's telling the truth because he's crazy.
He thinks he was abducted by aliens. We can make up whatever we want. You know, aliens on board craft, things happen. Go back to Earth.
They don't need to be true to his story because they probably didn't believe his story was true. You know, so that's... I know they say that it's based on a true story and, like, they're selling it to him as, hey, man, we really want to tell your story. But you know that, like, in the end, they're thinking to themselves, like, we could put whatever in this and it won't matter because...
Well, what actually happened to him is boring in a certain sense. So they had to make it a little bit more spicy, I guess.
And, you know, and it probably suffered a little bit from the communion story, too, where...
Which is another Hollywoodization of...
But Whitley doesn't care about that.
No.
Like, he'll tell the Hollywood story. He doesn't care.
No, true.
But I think that was kind of... I don't mean to badmouth Whitley. People get mad when I do that, but, you know, I just...
He's his own worst enemy with it.
It is what it is. But the that film having the elements that it had, I think they wanted to work some of that story. And we see that in a lot of these other... Like, I remember when you were talking to us about the movie The Fifth Kind before it was a movie, and you were talking about, like, they were making a movie about these cases, and they had been looking into these cases, these real-life true cases. And then the movie that came out was just a complete bastardization of those true cases. And it was really just like, we're going to do what we want because we don't think these people are telling the truth anyway. And I think that that's part of what happened with, you know, going back to the original Amityville Horror movie and the book. Like,
to a very loose degree, they did the same thing with Blair Witch. Blair Witch had pieces of other cases, you know, type of thing that happened, and they stitched that together into a story.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of came out from being completely fabricated to begin with, though. So, like, that was more of, you know, we're drawing inspiration from.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They took pieces, you know, old stories, and then they made their own story out of little pieces.
So with that, it's like, it's not as egregious messing with somebody's story. Although some people were mad about the legends that they did pick up, that they didn't just tell the legends. But the idea of taking a true story and turning it into... I mean, if you look at the 70s, there were a ton of these based on a true story books that were coming out, but they weren't paranormal themed.
Right.
They were all these true crime books. And there was a ton of those. And I remember because they were all in my house because my mother would read every single one of them. And so would my grandmother and my aunt, and they would just pass them around between them. But, you know, every one of these stories would get turned into a book, and the book was not necessarily the truth. I mean, people here in New Bedford went through that with The Killing Season, the book about the highway murders, where they say, okay, you know, it's a movie, but it's not... it's a book, but it's not really going to be an accurate book. And part of that is because you have an outsider trying to tell the story. And part of that is because, like, it's not a nonfiction book. It's not made to be, the document of what happened. It's made to be a true crime book that people will buy. And we even see some degree of that in some of the, you know, not the documentaries that come out about true crime stuff, but some of the, you know, the shows like that are on Discovery ID and Headline News, where it's like, you know, I don't even know the names of the programs, but it's like, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed killers or something like that. I'm just making up a title.
No, I got you.
But
I
like
you,
even the facts on those sometimes get a little bit warped. But the there is a good undercurrent of documentary filmmaking and podcasting that is telling the true story of those cases, and I'm glad for it. But in the 70s, you know, that was kind of the idea was the based on a true story helped you get away with a lot of stuff. And so if you remember, you know, the Lutzes talking about what happened they came out and said, you know, a lot of it was blown out of proportion, or a lot of it was added into their story, but that they had to go along with what it was as part of the agreement that they had. So now that's going to muddy the waters a little bit, because how can you backtrack on that later on and say, well, we were told to say that? You know, like, now you've really hurt your credibility. There's also the fact that people, half the people in Amityville, well, I'm sure most of the people in Amityville, but, you know, half the world doesn't believe the story. They think that the whole thing is a hoax and that the whole thing is made up. So let me ask you, based on what you know of the case and what you, and I know that you've digested just as much of it as I have over the years, was it a hoax? Did something happen in that house?
Well, something definitely did happen in that house in the DePayo's case.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think there could have been something going on afterwards. If there wasn't something before, it definitely is now.
I don't know about now.
Or
because that's the other part of this story, is that we haven't heard from anybody else that's lived there about more things happening. Now, I actually have a statement here.
Okay.
Let's see if I can pull it up. I think I lost it.
But has it really, really been occupied?
It's been occupied right along. I think there was a brief period where it was unoccupied. I want to say in the early 2000s or right around 2010, there was a portion of time when it was unoccupied. Somebody owned it, but they didn't live in it. It wasn't their full-time residence.
Yeah.
But I think right along since then, people have lived in it as their primary home. There was a statement that was from one of the families that lived in there after the Lutzes that basically said, nothing has ever happened in our home, and this is a total and complete hoax. And I don't know how you can say that, because you can say...
The McGinns had lived in Lizzie's and had decades where nothing happened, but
Martha did say that there might have been things that they weren't paying attention to.
Yeah.
So things could have happened.
Can that not be the same case here?
Right. And that, I don't know.
It all depends upon the subtleties of it. There's a difference between something being thrown at you and, you know, keys moving from the left side of the table to the right side of the table without you noticing.
But when you live in the Lizzie Borden house, you just know it as the house where murders took place. And so that might not, especially if you're not a paranormal believer, that might not necessarily put any kind of paranormal activity on your radar. If you live in the Amityville house post Lutz family, you can't be unaware of the fact.
Idea seeded in. Yeah, I got you.
So if it hadn't been the Lutzes that moved in after the DeFeos, if somebody else had moved in that, you know, didn't think about the paranormal, they might not notice things that happen. I mean, obviously the Lutzes had profound experiences, but I'm just saying, you know, you wouldn't have been moving in there thinking like you lived in a haunted house. You might be concerned about the fact that it could be haunted because people were killed in there, but you wouldn't move in with the mindset of living in a haunted house. And I'm sure the McGinns kind of felt the same way, where if there are ghosts, this would be a house that would be haunted, but they probably just didn't believe in it enough to feel like it was. And I think that belief, you know, kind of does help power some stuff.
Now, does it make you at least observant to it?
I mean, a little of both. Hmm. But I do think that anybody that lived in the Amityville house post Lutz family, there's no way they aren't aware.
Yeah.
So you're definitely aware of what the history is.
And,
So when you buy it, you know, you're of the mindset of, and you kind of have to make that decision in your head right away of, I don't believe in this stuff. I don't know if any family has bought that house that was a believer in the paranormal. And I say that with confidence, because if they were, I bet they would have come out and said something one way or the other. As opposed to, you know, saying, as one family did, you know, it's a hoax. It's the greatest hoax that's ever been. Somebody, the statement actually referred to it as, Amityville's version of Watergate. Which I don't know if I understand that reference, because Watergate wasn't a hoax. It was a crime.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I understand. I kind of get what you're trying to say, but it's also not the best the best reference point either. But that being said, if somebody had moved into that house that was remotely interested in the idea of the existence of ghosts, we would have heard something from them, I think, of saying, you know, yes or no, we've had experiences, we haven't. It is pretty interesting to see, you know, that the it's been overwhelmingly the other way. Overwhelmingly people saying, like, there's no way this is true. Whether it be the families that live there, the neighbors, what have you. I also would understand why they would want to say that, even if it wasn't true. So if you go out there and you buy that house, which has fluctuated in price, by the way, from anywhere from $1.2 million to $500,000 over the past, you know, 20 years.
Well, look, why don't we just hit Powerball?
Listen, you know this, but not a lot of people know this. I had somebody, an investor, that was willing to buy the house
and make you the caretaker
and turn it into a bed and breakfast. And we were told that it's not going to get approved. They will not change the zoning for that. So there's no way in hell. So that was the closest that I think we've come to getting in there. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't find other ways, but it'll happen at some point. I know it will. The people that live in town, the people especially that live in that neighborhood, they have a reason to want to see this story go away. Because you don't go and buy an $800,000 house, which is the average price of what's for sale around there. You don't go buy an $800,000 house and then want to have a bunch of people driving through your neighborhood to go pop in front of this house and take photos.
How many friends do we know that have been there and that done that?
Right, but what happens is you run out of the car and run back in.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't do it because they don't want you in the neighborhood doing it. But but that doesn't mean I'm still not going to go do it when I go. But the idea is the idea is you have to be respectful of the circumstance. And we saw the same thing happen with the Conjuring House.
Yeah.
Before it was opened up as a paranormal investigation place. You know, that the neighbors around there didn't want people coming in. Now it's a whole matter of, you know, that's what people are going there for. And I recently talked to Dan Klass, who owns the Hinsdale House. And he was saying that he made sure that he made friends with all the neighbors. Because not only is it important to keep them happy, because there's going to be a lot of traffic coming into this area, this residential area for his house, but also because their neighbors are your best, you know, security system.
Yeah.
So you want to have them be on your side and you want to get along with them. And I think that was something that was not necessarily the case with the previous owner of the Conjuring House. And I think maybe the new owners are trying to make sure that they do that. But in Amityville, they just don't want you there. And I can only imagine what would happen if I showed up in town, because, you know, I'm not just going to be satisfied with driving by and then turning around and going, you know. A funny story. I actually, when I was covering the Celtics, one of the early years that I covered the Celtics, there was a player that came to the team. I can't remember his name. It was Mike something. I can't remember his last name, but he was from Amityville, went to Amityville High School, and I was looking through my show notes, my game notes, rather, and it says, you know, where everybody went to high school, where they went to college, their hometown, gives you a little bio of them all, like, for every game they used to do this, and before they stopped printing them out because they were killing trees unnecessarily. Yeah. But as I'm going through, it almost just popped in my head. It says that he's from Amityville. So I go in the locker room and I start talking to him about Amityville. And he's of the mindset that the whole thing is a hoax. He's like, except a few times. And then he starts launching into some of these stories. And I said, well, do a lot of people in town have that approach of, yeah, it's a hoax, but here's this story that I heard that I can't figure out. And so, and he said that was kind of the way that they looked at it. That it was... it was something where nobody wanted to believe it, but that wouldn't mean that they didn't have something that would lead them to possibly believe it. So that's understandable, I would think.
Well, the only thing that really has me puzzled is that, I'll call it infamous picture of the little boy.
Oh, that happened during the seance that was conducted where the Warrens conducted the seance, but there was 20 people in the
professional
house.
Professional photographer from a news.
There was
newspaper.
There was multiple media outlets there for that night. And again, I can't say anything about the documentary, but they do get into that very heavily in the documentary, like how that seance came about.
Okay.
Again, I can't review it.
It's been so long since I read about that. I'm talking, 20-something years ago. But yeah, that's the only piece of paranormal thing that I saw that made me sit up and look and go, okay. DePeo, he's looking for, as far as I could tell, as my own personal beliefs, he was looking for a scapegoat for what he did. I think it was all messed up that night and, stuff happened. And he snapped and whatever, and, he's looking, to cover his ass. But,
by the way, Mike James was the name of the Celtics player.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but I agree. I would agree with that, there's... You need a good alibi, and he didn't have one.
Well, The Exorcist had only been out a few years earlier. So, that is something I think
the movie would have been 2 years prior to the Lutz case, if I remember right. 73 was the movie?
72, 73, around there, yeah. So that would have been relatively fresh back then. And talk about, a movie based on a real story. Well, partially based. They borrowed. You got what I mean.
Exorcist was 73 based on the book from 71.
Okay, yeah. I know 71 was in there somehow. But yeah.
And then Amityville was, I think, the Lutz murder. I mean, the DeFeo murders happened in 74.
74,
and
75.
The Lutz family moved in December of 75.
Yeah.
And then the book, I think, came out 77, and the movie came out 79. I might be wrong on some of those numbers, but I'll look those up during the break to see how close I am. But you're right, though. The story came about, supposedly, and this is where a lot of the people that look at it being a hoax point to, was the lawyer for DeFeo, William Weber, he met with the Lutzes, and what's it, the famous, like, two or three bottles of wine they concocted this whole story over. And so they came up with this story, and then the idea was that Weber was then able to use the possession defense for DeFeo. Now, there's been people on both sides of that who have said that that's been overplayed. I think when we had Laura DiDio on, she said that was kind of the case that, like, yeah, they did have a meeting, but there's no way that they concocted this whole story. And mainly because, can you imagine if Weber did participate in that story and creating it, wouldn't he have wanted a cut?
Yeah.
That would be a big part of it. And I know there was something in the contract. They addressed this in the documentary too, but that there was something in the contract that if they didn't play along with it or something, like, he would get the rights to the story. So there was some, also a little known trivia fact, but Diane Franklin, who plays the sister in Amityville 2, goes on to play the mother in an Amityville movie that came out like 2 years ago that supposedly tells the DeFeo story too.
Okay.
So, yeah, I forget that. And speaking of movies, as we're going through, talking about some of this stuff, there are no shortage of Amityville films coming out. We know that there have been a ton of them in recent years.
Oh, yeah.
My understanding is, and again, this is just stuff that I've heard. I don't have any proof of this. But my understanding is that the rights are up in a few years. So they want to try and crank out as much of this as they can before the rights are up again, because they expect that Blumhouse will snatch up those rights so that they can start producing Amityville movies connected to the Conjuring universe. which is, if you saw, I think it was what, Conjuring 2, where they allude to the Amityville case. They have the and Lorraine Warren investigating what is obviously Amityville, but they don't call it that. And so there's an idea that they're trying to crank out as many titles as they can. There's another story that I heard, and I don't know how true this is, that because the rights were owned by Miramax or whatever, that they're trying to crank out as much as they can for Harvey Weinstein's, you know, they were trying to crank him out for his defense fund.
Yeah.
Because it was the only property that they had that was a moneymaker. I don't know if that's true because they sold Miramax to Disney, I think. So I think that that's kind of just been an overblown rumor. But I can't understand, like, trying to get that stuff out there because not only has it been, you know, I guess profitable. I guess people are watching these movies. But also it's been highlighted in recent years because the Lutz kids came forward and each had their own version of the story to tell. So we have, you know, not only has there been a couple in the last few years, let's see what those were. Looking up the titles here. We had the Amityville Terror. There was Amityville The Awakening. What was the one from 2018? The Amityville Murders. That's the one that has Diane Franklin in it. But then there are a slew of other ones that are in the works. Amityville Island. That was supposedly something that came out this year. There was Amityville Harvest. Now, none of these seem to have any direct connection to the Amityville House. The Amityville Hex is scheduled to come out next year. The synopsis of that is a paranormal death hex becomes a viral sensation. Can it be stopped before it's too late? Wait a minute. A paranormal death hex becomes a... Are they trying to say that, like, when you talk about Amityville, there's a curse associated with it?
Hmm.
Stole that idea from us? there's also... The Amityville Vampire, that's supposed to be coming out.
Okay.
There's no information on that. Now, keep in mind, some of these could just be low-budget things that have nothing to do with anything. This one is something that I'm interested in finding out more about it, but it's in development, and they don't have that much information about it. The Amityville Legend, trying to find out more about what that is. Also, Amityville Cop is another one that's in development.
Okay.
I think I mentioned Amityville Island. We also had, this one came out in 2020. I have to find a copy of this because the title alone makes me want to own it. And I bet you my friend Gary has a copy of this because he is as obsessed with Amityville as I am and he loves bad movies. So he might have this. This is called... I have to think if I can save this on the air. I guess it's after 10 p.m. The Amityville Vibrator.
Okay.
Do you want the synopsis on it?
No, I think I
got
it. No,
I'm going to give it to you anyway. Kathy moves into a new home and soon comes into contact with a vibrator with ancient evil powers. Two researchers must locate this possessed item before Kathy and anyone else she encounters becomes a sex slave for Satan. Now, of course, one of the most famous things about the Amityville Horror movie is the priest going to bless the house and hearing a voice. What does the voice tell him? The voice tells him, get out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for God's sake, get out. Well, the tagline on the poster for Amityville Vibrator, for God's sake, get off.
Oh, God.
So if anybody out there has a DVD copy of the Amityville Vibrator, I will give you the address of the station. You can send it here. But I'm definitely going to try and look that up and see if I can find it for myself. Because, again, it came out. It has reviews. Let's see what the reviews are. It has 27 critical reviews. Let's see if I recognize any of these sites that are...
I'm sure Lamone has reviewed it.
Speaking of Lamone, I want to thank him. I did get my gift, my package. I'm sure he's going to call in. But I did get my gift that he had sent in the mail that he was concerned about whether or not I got it. He sent me the complete first miniseries of my favorite comic book character of all time, Ambush Bug.
Excellent.
So part of one of the things that I've been talking about is I want to try to find out, you know, exactly what's going on with the rights to Ambush Bug, whether it's still maintained by DC Comics, whether it has anything to do with Keith Giffen, the creator, because I think that could be a huge character for DC to exploit and to, you know, to create properties for, because he could be the Deadpool of DC. In fact, I've often told people that Deadpool owes a debt of gratitude to Ambush Bug, because the way that Deadpool breaks down the fourth wall and talks about Marvel and the Marvel universe and all that comes directly from what Ambush Bug was doing about DC years before. So I've always been an ardent fan of Ambush Bug, even when other people tell me like it's the worst comic book character they've ever heard of in their life. It's and like even his origin story is not really like we don't really know exactly what's true. You know, is it a man-sized bug? Is it a guy in a bug suit? Is it a guy in an alien suit? You know, it's all very confusing and it changes from story to story. So on purpose, because like they basically think nobody cares about the character, so we can screw with it as much as we can. But damn it, some of us are hardcore Ambush Bug fans and want to see him get his just due. He did make it into one of the DC games. What was it, Injustice? He made it into that game as like a non-playable character that just shows up. And he was featured in an episode of Batman Brave and the Bold, the cartoon that came out a few years ago. And he was voiced in that by Henry Winkler.
Oh, God.
So if you got the Fonz doing your voice, you can't be that bad of a character, you know? Although I don't think he was doing the Fonz voice for him. I think it was more as Henry Winkler voice, which anybody that's heard it knows is definitely not the Fonz.
No.
In fact, Henry Winkler as a person is like the most un-Fonzy guy that there ever was, which is why it just shows what a great actor he is, because the Fonz was the coolest.
Still is.
Absolutely. So we can talk about all that more coming up. We are going to take a break. On the other side, we'll take your calls as well, 508-996-0500, if you would like to call in. You can also email us, spookycrew@spookysouthcoast.com. You can talk about the show on Twitter using the hashtag SpookyLive. And you can also email, phone call. Yeah, there's no chat room because we don't have the video going. I'll try and mess around with that and see if we can't get that up and running, but all you would have seen this week anyway is just Moniz and I, and nobody cares about that. It's just a matter of which one of us is going to go get a haircut first.
You.
Probably. I'll tell you why during the break. But yeah, I'm not quite at Moniz level of the length of my hair yet, but it's definitely gotten to the point, and my son's is even worse than mine. Like, his is down to almost his shoulders, and it's all curly and everything. I was like, you look like Sammy Hagar. Like, you should go get your hair cut. Except he's, you know, blonde instead of, well, Sammy's blonde sometimes, too. Yeah. We'll be back with more Spooky South Coast in just a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more here on WBSM.
Are you intrigued by paranormal talk radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment. The Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Hi, everybody. This is Tim Weisberg, the host of Spooky South Coast. If you like Spooky South Coast, do us a favor, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to Spooky South Coast there. You can also download us anywhere you get podcasts completely free of charge. Also, I host a weeknight program called Midnight Society on the brand new network Midnight.fm. You can tune in each and every Monday through Friday to find out all the latest paranormal interesting stuff going on out there, and even some stuff that's not paranormal as well. You can listen live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time each and every weeknight, but if you can't listen live, then all you have to do is go to Midnight.fm and subscribe, and you can listen to that program anytime you'd like. So SpookySouthCoast.com to get that program, Midnight.fm to get Midnight Society. Thank you all for your support, and stay spooktacular.
hour number two of Spooky South Coast. Tim Weisberg here, along with science advisor Matt Moniz. Stephanie Burke is under the weather tonight. She'll hopefully be back. Well, we should be back next week with a new show, and the week after that. But I think the third week or whatever, the 16th to 17th of January, I think we might not have a show because I might have to travel. I can't reveal why. Well, I think I can. There was a certain television series that I was involved in 2020 that I may be going to film season two of. I'll know more on January 4th about that, but, you know, I might be out of town for that. And then we'll have our anniversary party coming up on January 15th. Ooh. No, January 26th,
yeah.
Our 15th anniversary party. So just another year and a half and we can drive.
Yeah.
And but I mean, I don't want to get all reflective about the anniversary, especially because we've been accused of being too self-indulgent, but it's only because
it's our show.
We're just surprised each year that we've made it another year. So especially this year, the way this year has gone, I almost feel like it's wrong to celebrate an anniversary this year because we missed half of 2020 when we couldn't get into the building.
Yeah.
So, but you know, we'll do something. And also, I said to Moniz as we were going into the news, as Amityville 2 was wrapping up on TV, you know, oh, I wonder what's on now. And of course, I knew there was going to be Amityville 3 3D. Now, did you see this in the theater when it came out in 3D?
No. I saw it HBO, Cinemax, one of those.
But did you ever see it in 3D?
No.
Okay, I remember it was, because I think this came out 83, so it would have been probably not that long after that, that I watched it in 3D at my house, and you used to have to go to the 7-Eleven or whatever to get the 3D glasses to watch the 3D movies. Channel 56 showed a lot of 3D movies.
True.
They would do like King Kong in 3D and all these different, like, and you would have to go and get the glasses.
House of Wax and yeah.
But it was always, you know, something like along those lines.
Yeah.
But then I remember we got, I think we might have talked about this before, but they had, I remember two different services, Preview and Starcase.
Oh, God.
They were like precursors to cable.
Yeah.
It was like a box that you brought into your house.
Yep.
And it played the same movies every night, the same things at the same night every time. So if you missed it on Tuesday night at 8, you could watch it Wednesday night at 8.
Yep.
And it was basically, you know, the same way cable would be. It's like movies that were just in the theater maybe a year before they've gone to free television.
It was connected to cable, but you had to buy the separate box for it or something like that.
It wasn't cable. So it didn't come from cable. I believe it was, if I remember right, it was over the airwaves, but you had to have the box to descramble the signal. So it was not, okay. It was not a door, because we had it because Randolph hadn't yet gotten cable. I didn't get cable until I was 5 and I moved into Brockton. But this was when I was 4. We had this, and I remember it. I have recollections. And we had Starcase at my house, and my upstairs neighbor had Preview. So whatever you wanted to watch, we would just go, you know, yep. If everybody wanted to watch something on Starcase, they'd come downstairs. If we wanted to watch something on Preview, we'd go upstairs. Which we probably could have just disconnected the boxes and brought those up. But anyway, but I remember that's when I think I saw Amityville in 3D, and then Jaws 3D. I remember seeing that the same way. Where you had to get the glasses from the, you know, from the convenience store or whatever, and you could watch it in 3D at your house. So, yeah, I mean, Amityville is not a good movie. Amityville 3D is not a good movie. It's slightly better if you're watching it in 3D, but I'm kind of a little a fan of it, but also not a fan of it because it doesn't have anything to do with the Lutzes or the DeFeos. But they introduced the character of what's his name? John Baxter, played by Tony Roberts, who is a journalist who is trying to look at what's going on from a journalistic perspective. So in a way, I kind of identify with that, you know? So I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, now that I, you know, going back and watching it again, I was like, oh, I can kind of understand where he's coming from. But I also still, think it's a lousy movie. But it got worse. You know, it wasn't the worst of the movies, but they definitely did get worse. But he, the idea is that even though they don't talk about the Lutzes, he's based on a true life investigator who is trying to, a true life journalist who is trying to prove that the Lutzes were creating a hoax. So they did kind of address that to some degree in the Amityville series. I think it was the next one where it started to get like less about the house and more about objects that came from the house. So we had like Amityville, It's About Time, when it's the clock is haunted. Then I think there was another one where the mirror was haunted. You know, all these different items that people would bring into their homes that were originally in the Amityville house because they couldn't keep making movies happen at the Amityville house. Yeah. Mainly because if I remember right, it had something to do with the house, because the actual house that they film the movies at was in Toms River, New Jersey. Like the exteriors of the house are in Toms River, New Jersey, and I think that house sold, so they weren't allowed to go there and film the exteriors anymore. And then when they started making all these new movies, they went to miniatures. So now all the houses that you see in these Amityville movies are just miniature Amityville houses that look like the original house. Which,
and if I'm not mistaken, one of the movies has the miniature in the movie.
There's an Amityville dollhouse movie.
Yeah.
They did change. So the house, for those who are unfamiliar, the house has changed its appearance.
Yes.
First of all, it's no longer 112 Ocean Avenue. In a brilliant move to throw everybody off, they changed the address to 108 Ocean Avenue. and it still looks exactly the same. The only difference is they took out the quarter moon windows and replaced them with regular windows. But if you go back and you look, I think in the original Amityville movie, and certainly in Amityville 2, because I noticed that as I was watching it earlier, they don't have that. I don't know what you would call it, but the part of the house that sticks out in the front that has like the flat roof on it, where you can go out of the second floor window and stand on the roof of that portion of the house.
Yeah.
That they don't have that in the movies, but that exists on the real house. Because I've always watched like footage of that and said to myself, like, you never see like anybody putting a chair out there or a table or anything. Like, it's just sitting there with nothing on it. And I was like, well, that's odd. Like, you would think somebody would want to like go out their window and sit on a chair in that section. But I don't know. I don't know how that all works. And I've never been fancy enough to live in a house that has a boathouse either. So,
yeah, gotcha.
Which my favorite part was when the Lutzes bought the house from the DeFeos, they had a pool like 5 feet from the actual river there, the water that they're on. So
I believe it's a pond.
I think it's a river. I think it's a saltwater river that comes through connects to the ocean.
Okay.
I'd have to look at the geography of it, but 508-996-0500 is the number if you'd like to call in, and I think I know who's on the line here. Good evening. You're on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
What's shaking, Playboy?
What's happening, Lamone? How are you?
Pretty good. Just living and loving. So I guess you talked me up. So you were talking about great movies, okay? Funny movies. Have you ever seen the movie? It's a copy. It's called The Exorcist. It's spelled like exercise, fifth. And it's and it came around about the same time that surf Nazism was died. And it has like Richard Simmons, okay? And Richard Simmons running around and fighting demons that possess fat ladies and stuff like that. He says, get out of her. Get out of that fat bitch. He was part of my French.
Yeah. I did not see that.
Chunky Hepa. It was really funny. And it's like I saw it like one time. And it's like, Rich, you know how he has those shimmery, shiny shorts and stuff like that? He was running around. It was looking kind of like Epstein from Welcome Back, Carter. With his hair. But his hair was big and stuff like Richard Simmons. It was funny as all out. I thought it was really funny. I was walking when I heard you guys talking about funny films, and you talk about like what was it in 3D? I remember Piranha in 3D, and I remember watching the Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D. I think a lot of people had that when they first started doing your television up to do 3D.
I just want to say, I'm looking up on the internet The Exorcist with Richard Simmons, and I see nothing.
I saw it when Surf Nazism Must Die came out. You saw that? I saw it at the theaters, in the theaters, the same time that that was in. We snuck in, saw it. Was at Cinemas 123 downtown on the Strip, off the Strip. I mean, downtown, off of Fremont. And it was awesome. It was funny. It's like, it felt like Exorcist, like Exorcise Cyst. And it's like, it was funny as cat crap. It was really enjoyable.
You know, speaking of iconic bad movies, I don't know if you saw this, Limone, but they're making a remake of the Toxic Avenger.
Oh yeah, I told you about that like 4 months ago. Yeah, I told you that we doing one of the after sessions, and it was like I told you that would be kind of interesting. I think it's supposed to have the little dude, Warwick, the one dude play the the guy played Leprechaun,
Warwick Davis.
Yeah, I think, or is he, I don't know if he's still alive, but they were supposed to have him playing that character, I think so.
No, they're actually going to have Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones.
Close enough, they all look alike.
Oh, you know, come on.
When you're at that size, you know, heaven forbid, you know.
No, we can't let that happen. You can't say that on the air. I mean, you know this, you go to a lot of movies. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, there's enough of these reboots being successful that they're just going to try everything. And at least, I know at least in this one, you know, Lloyd Kaufman is involved with the reboot. So, like, that's a good sign.
Like they're doing the Home Alone and, like, you know, next, like, this year coming up, Coming to America, too. So, you know, that's a good one to wait for.
That looks pretty good.
I think one movie that I would like to see, like, the sequel to Bowfinger. Remember Bowfinger?
Yeah, I don't think that was successful enough to warrant a sequel.
I think that's such a sad thing. There's such great comedic talent. They should have been able to do something special with that.
And right up there, I was like, with Ishtar 2.
Right. I still laugh. Hello. With his braces. I still laugh. So it was funny to me. So, but I think, yes.
Did you get to see Wonder Woman 84?
Yes, I did. Thursday night.
What'd you think of it?
I'm kind of partial toward DC Comics. I thought it was pretty good. I scale out of 1 to 10, I'd give it a 7. And that's pretty good. That's pretty decent for anything over a 5, 5.5, 6 is pretty, is worth watching.
I don't think I would rate it that high myself.
I was kind of had a lot of things. I wasn't the only person watching it. And so I had much excitement. I was all into it. Like I said, they took stuff out of it. They, since, you know, had all that extra time to take in, because it wasn't being shown, and they took parts out of it, so left a bit to be desired.
There's a lot more they could have taken out of it. It was way too long.
But they're going to be putting that into the. I think some of that's supposed to be running with that new, the new Justice League, the new movie that they're supposed to be doing the Justice League. I think that's going to be good. And your Ambush Bug is going to be in the upcoming. It's not this Justice League movie. There's going to be the next one coming up. Going to have something with going to have a lot of them with, like, I think The Flash is going to be the Flash movie. That's what's going to be. He's going to make an appearance in there. Well, I just thought that would be kind of nice. And that would be the Christmas one, too.
That'd be super awesome. Yeah, the Ambush Bug stocking stuffer, yeah.
Did you get that other thing for the little one?
I did, thank you.
I don't know if it was the right size. I don't want to, you know, because I don't know if he's kind of chunky like us. So I didn't know. But do you think it'll fit him?
Oh yeah, he's already over 6 feet tall and he's only 16. So, I'm definitely gonna be forever looking up to him. He's already taller than I am.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, that's playing basketball.
That's all I want. All I said is I want a son that will be taller than I am because he should at least hit 6 feet. But the doctor told us long, long time ago, like, oh, he's gonna be 6 feet, all right. He's gonna be well over that. And so, you know, my ceilings are only 6'7", so.
you didn't say nothing about you being a mutant, huh? That you're passing on those mutant genes?
No, so my mutations are not the kind of mutations that are genetically, you know, I can't pass them on. You know, that was the first thing that I checked when he was born, was I went over and I counted the number of fingers that he has since I was born with an extra thumb.
Well, you were. So what do you do with your extra thumb?
Well, they took it off when I was a baby.
Really? I know a lot of people born with extra pinky.
No, I had an extra thumb on my left hand, and I still have the little scar from where they removed it, and they didn't let me keep it in a jar or anything.
That's sad. You could be twice as cool as the Fonz. Hey,
like imagine giving people that thumbs up, like two thumbs. I could have been like Siskel and Ebert. I could have been their guy that they call in when a movie's really really good. Three thumbs up.
Yeah, up where? So that's crazy. Oh, I was going to tell you a really good joke. but you might have to, I can start. These two tampons were walking down the street.
Oh, boy. Is this a problem? You know that we're on the regular radio, right?
Yes, I know how to do this. So it's like, which one will be the first one to talk to you?
I don't know.
Neither. They're both stuck up. See, you went.
All right, that's okay. Yep.
See you next Tuesday.
All right, okay. Thank you, Lamone. We'll talk to you next week. I can't let you stay on the air after that. Sorry. I'll get in trouble by the management. I appreciate the humor, but not really what we were looking for. But again, you know, thank you for the gifts in the mail. I don't want to seem ungrateful, but I can't let you stay on the air after that. 508-996-0500 for anybody but Lamone. We got to put him in timeout tonight for the rest of the show. Going back to what I was saying, though, about the reboots of these movies and the remakes and the fact that they are now putting them out directly to streaming, I think we're going to see a lot more successful horror films by putting them in people. I know that the horror movies have been one of the few things that have been successful in movie theaters the last few years. It's pretty much been superhero movies and horror movies that have been, you know, driving the movie industry. Now, you never see the horror films show up in the, you know, the top 10. You know, maybe like the Annabelle movies or, you know, things from the Conjuring universe might. But a lot of these other smaller horror films, like where they did a remake of Black Christmas, you know, what are some, you know, Get Out, movies like that.
Yeah.
You know, those movies have done pretty well. And, you know, they might not beat the superhero movies in terms of the dollars that come in, but they've been keeping the industry afloat, you know, and when in between these superhero films, those are the movies that have been carrying the day. So it'll be interesting to see as they're putting more stuff out on streaming, if they hold back those horror films to put those in the theater. I don't know about you. I know that you don't have a lot of streaming services. I kind of have all of them because I just sign up for them to watch something and then I forget to cancel them.
I have basic cable and that's mainly just so I can have internet connection.
The CBS All Access, which is their streaming service, which previously a lot of people had just because of the wealth of Star Trek that they have. They have everything Star Trek ever. They have the remastered original series. Have you seen this?
No.
So,
well, you got the DVD collection.
The remastered one, I don't know if the DVDs are the remastered. I think this is from 2018. But the remastered have been upgraded to, like, I guess 4K. And they've replaced some of the special effects with some more modern special effects. Yes. So the Enterprise at the beginning looks different.
Yes, yes, yes. I have seen the upgraded version.
And it looks super, super, like, crisp on the TV, but also you can kind of tell, like, oh, that looks cardboard. New. That doesn't look as real. That doesn't look as real as it should. I think I just saw somebody's hand sliding the sliding door open and closed. You know, so it's like not as good. But anyway, that's all up there. But they also have a remake of The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand, that they're putting out. You know, it's a week-by-week release of this limited
Whoopi
series.
Goldberg's in it.
Yep, she plays Mother Abigail.
Okay.
And the guy from True Blood, the Sarsgaard.
It's a miniseries, right?
Yeah.
Just like the original one they did.
But this is definitely, I think they probably have more episodes planned than that one had because they're taking it very slow and they're really kind of introducing all the characters the right way. But it's been very well done. The music choices on that are phenomenal. So, you know, the first episode, they introduce you to Randall Flagg at the end of it, and they hit you with Billy Joel's The Stranger.
Hmm.
Great song, and used perfectly. And then the second one, you know, not to ruin the story, anybody that's familiar with The Stand knows that when Flagg lets Lloyd out of the prison, you know, he gives them a key to get out of the jail cell. And so then they come at it with Melanie's Brand New Key. I don't know if you remember that song. I've got a brand new pair of roller skates. You've got a brand new key. Yeah. Which also works because Heather Graham is in the episode, and she was Roller Girl in Boogie Nights, and that song was associated with that. So it really works on multiple levels. But that's pretty well done for people that are looking for something to watch. But then, you know, I also caught on Shudder. There's a remastered version of Phantasm.
What?
So I didn't realize that this, and I think it was 2016 or 18, J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot, his company Bad Robot, I guess he's a super fan of Phantasm. In Star Wars.
It's one of my favorites.
Well, in Star Wars, you've seen the new Star Wars movies?
Yeah, I've seen them with the enhancements.
So in, no, I mean the new ones, new sequel series. Yeah. So when The Force Awakens came out, there was the all chrome bad guy, Captain Phasma. And the name Phasma is a tribute to Phantasm because it's the chrome of the orbs.
Yeah.
So there's a remastered version of Phantasm that J.J. Abrams oversaw. So I watched that earlier today. It's pretty well done. So you can see it on Shudder for free. Well, if you have the Shudder service. But I also noticed that when I tried to call up, because I was trying to watch Phantasm 2, but that's not on Shudder. So I have to, like, get that from my cable box. But you can get the remastered one through the Comcast box, too. But, yeah, it was definitely a much crisper cut. It still, you know, looks very 70s. But what do you expect from, you know, a small independent movie from the 70s? But what is it that you like about Phantasm? Why is it one of your favorites?
Well, besides the Hemi Cuda.
Right. Although, the one thing that bothers me about that film is the fact that the guy who owns the car doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Well, back when it was made, it was still, you know, just your average muscle car.
But the fact that the little brother is the one, like, fixing it, and then he's just, like, shaking his head, like, I have no idea what you're talking about when you're talking about, you know, the header needs to be adjusted. Like, I just, that kind of bothered me a little bit. But
what I liked about it was its premise. You know, it was a scary movie in the sense that it wasn't all Hollywoodized special effects. Most of it was the horror was in suspense of the interaction of the characters. Yeah, you had a bit of the, you know, special effects added into it with the way they had the ball and everything. But, you know, the storyline carried itself.
And you're right. There's not a lot of, like, over-the-top special effects. It looks very indie. One of the other things about it, though, is do you know what the target audience was for that movie? Like...
I would assume, you know, the 18 to 34 crowd.
There was like 10 to 12-year-old boys.
Really?
Was who they were targeting with that film. And if you think about it...
They wouldn't have been able to get into the film at the theater, though.
Right, but that's not like... I don't think that was necessarily the concern about getting them into the theater. I think it was more about like making a movie that they could watch that would kind of stand up for them. So if you go back and you watch it, there's not a lot of objectionable material in the film.
Not really. No.
Like, even the one F-bomb that's in the film, the kid just mouths the words. He doesn't actually say it out loud. And, there's some sexual situations, but they don't show anything.
Right.
So it's done in a way where, you could be a 10, 12-year-old boy and watch that movie. And your parents might be like, I don't know if you really should see this. But then when you watch it, they're like, yeah, that's okay. You know, and it's not overwhelmingly terrifying either. That, like, it's going to give a kid nightmares. So it's kind of like the perfect entry to horror. And I wish I had seen it, you know, when I was that age. Instead of seeing it, you know, years later.
It came out in what, 78,
79? 79, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you think about it, you know, the tall man was a character that lasted forever.
And is now part of, actually, how many tall man legends do we get that tall Slender Man?
Well, there's a direct correlation of Slender Man to the tall man. And you know, part of it was the people who made that first movie. Like, they had such a love for the story and the characters and everything that they wanted to keep going back to. I mean, what's his name there? The guy who became kind of the main hero of the movie. Reggie.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that guy to be the hero. Like, and you wouldn't expect him to be the guy that, like, leads the series going forward.
Ice cream truck driver. You know, yeah.
Like, first of all, like, the first time I watched that movie, I was like, so is this guy, like, a friend of the director? Because he's a horrible actor, and he looks way too old to be part of the group of friends that he's part of. And then you find out, yes, he is a friend of the director, and that's how he got in the movie, and then becomes, like, the guy who leads the movie. Let's take a phone call here. Good evening. You're next on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
It's been a while. It certainly has been a while since you...
Oh, my bad. I just hung up on you. Call back. That was my fault. Totally my fault.
Pushed the wrong button.
I did. I went to put the next call on hold, and I pressed it on the wrong side.
I saw it.
So go ahead and call back. We'll take this call in the meantime. Good evening. You're on Spooky South Coast.
Hey, guys. John New Bedford. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Good. Getting back to 3D movies a couple minutes ago. I didn't see Phantasm. I'm a bad, bad person. But it seems like in the 80s, the early 80s, there was this whole... I mean, 3D movies, every movie comes out in 3D now. But in the 80s, it seemed like there was this whole thing of... This whole... Like, the Jaws 3D, Friday the 13th 3D. Everything seemed to be in 3D for this one, you know, group of years back then. And I had some bad babysitters. My buddy of mine and I, his sister worked at the mall, and she'd buy us tickets to movies we shouldn't have been seeing. So I saw Friday the 13th 3D, Friday the 13th 3D at the mall. And I was like, I must have been seven.
You know, but that's, it was, I hate to sound like the old fuddy-duddy, but it was a different time. You know, you could go and see that. Nobody was really checking IDs of kids going into movies back then.
Yeah, it was a different time, and it's, you know, yeah, it was just, I don't know, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but I remember seeing that. I saw Jaws 3D in the theaters, and when you said Phantasm was, you know, aimed at, like 10 and around that age, that to me, what I thought of was, I mean, Friday the 13th 3 wasn't made for 10-year-olds or 7-year-olds. But that's something I remember. Cherished childhood memory.
and when you went into a movie like that, you weren't the only kid that age in the movie.
Exactly.
You know, I remember the only time that I remember getting flack trying to get into a movie was Showgirls. When Showgirls came out, and it was NC-17, but I believe I was 17, but one of my friends wasn't, so we did the old, you know, let him in the back door trick.
Yeah, I was going to say, that came out in like the 90s, I think.
Yeah, I think I want to say it was 95 or 96, so I was probably old enough to go see it, and it was the Buzzards Bay Theater that was running it. Yeah. And my friend wasn't old enough, so we went in and we bought the tickets. We went down to the exit and we opened the door and let him in, and then we got caught.
I had an interesting moment at Flagship Theater, and it was Freddy versus Jason, and I went for, it was a matinee on like a Tuesday. I had the day off for some reason, so I wanted to go see that. I was the only one in the theater. It must have been toward the end of the run. I was the only one in the theater. It was maybe 2 in the afternoon. It was a matinee show. I wanted to see Freddy versus Jason. And I'll sit there through the credits. This was long before end credits scenes were even a thing. But partway through the credits, the film jammed and melted.
Oh, wow.
Which if you're in the movie theater, that's not something that happens. So I was like, okay, the movie's over, I guess. The lights never came back up. I went outside. The whole outside of the theater was empty. There was nobody at the concession. There was no one at the ticket booth. So I just watched this movie.
And you felt like you were in a Freddy dream.
I watched the film melt. I go out. No one's around.
All of a sudden you hear, dun, 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 dun. I actually saw that in the theater. And I saw it in the Wareham Flagship. And I think I was only one of like 3 or 4 people in the theater seeing it. Yeah. And I thought, wow, this is like, I would have expected more people to be in the theater to see this film. But there was, you know, that was it. We were the only ones that were in the theater. And it was almost like we were a bunch of, you know, like we were like geeking out for every moment.
Yeah.
And cheering things on. It was like, I want to see like a Star Wars movie where everybody like stands up and cheers at certain scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one time that I had something like what you had happen is I went and saw, I think it was Once Upon a Time in Mexico, like the end of the El Mariachi series mm-hmm. of movies. And yeah. I was the only person in the theater. And it was, the movie was just about, you know, at the climax, you know, the end of the film, but with like maybe 20 minutes left and the film broke. And I went and I complained, and they're like, well, we can't, there's nothing we can do about it. Like you'll have to just come back and see it again. Like, we can't fix it and start it up from that same point. So I was like, what? So I had to like go into another screening of it and watch the whole thing again. And it wasn't really that good of a movie to make it worth sitting through all that much.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
All right. Later.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
508-996-0500. Good evening. You're next on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I promise I won't hang up on you again.
Oh, that's okay. You know what? I thought it was me because I just got a new Bluetooth headset and I was like, hello?
No, I went to take the next call and put it on hold, and I'm so out of practice that I just hung up on you.
It's all good, Tim. It's not a big deal. How's everybody doing? It's been a while.
Doing very well. How's awesome. You? How's the family?
Everyone's good. Little one's teeth are coming in, though. That's been challenging, but, you know.
You think it's challenging now? Wait till they start falling out. You're going to go broke.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know when it went from a quarter a tooth to $5 for the first tooth. Or I've seen some parents give $20 bill for the first tooth.
Yeah,
I've seen the Tooth Fairy give $20.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Not the awful movie with The Rock, though.
Oh, God.
No, but I was saying earlier, you know, I always felt like Phantasm II was very underrated. You know, especially the whole scene where they break into the hardware store and they're making all the weapons that they get. And, you know,
yep.
I know Reggie was like kind of the later hero, but I think the four barrel shotgun should have been the real hero of the story.
True. Did you see that documentary? I don't know if you have Shudder.
I did. I took advantage of it through Halloween. I think it was free for a little while.
And did you watch Into the Darkness?
I did. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I keep telling Moniz, like, you got to get yourself like a free trial of Shudder just so you can watch. It's a 10-hour documentary.
Oh, is it totally
or 4 hours? 4-hour documentary.
Yes.
On all of the 80s horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's funny because I've followed a couple of the YouTubers that put it together, Brendan Tennold and Good Bad Flicks, for a few years now, and they were involved in it, and it's really cool because just a lot of the feedback that they had put into it was just very well done. So.
Yeah, and you get, like, you know, some of the stars talking about it, some of the people that look back on it, you know, critically, but really just everybody. And also, did you see the documentary on Nightmare 2?
Not the whole thing. We started watching it, actually, but I haven't watched the entire thing. But I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a whole documentary, Moniz, on A Nightmare on Elm Street 2 and how it is, you know, like a gay icon film.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I mean, how long has it been since you've seen Nightmare 2?
Oh, God. Early, mid-90s.
So if you go back and watch it now and you watch it through a different lens, it's a very, you know, it's very much the, how do I, it's creating a male Scream Queen. And that's actually the name of the documentary. It's Scream Queen. Mm-hmm. And it's all about how, you know, the actor who played, what's his name, Mark?
Yeah.
The actor who played him is gay. But, like, they didn't realize that they were making it into a gay horror film and having a gay character, a gay protagonist in the horror film. Hmm. But it when you look at it through that, you're like, oh. And it makes what is generally considered to be a bad movie, it makes a lot more sense. And it's a better movie as a result of it looking at it through that lens. Because otherwise, it's a bad film.
Especially the whole part with the coach.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of parts in that movie that you're like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's,
yeah.
But then they also didn't, you know, they claim they didn't even realize that they were doing that stuff when they were doing it. So
that's what they say.
Yeah. But you know, it's hard.
One thing I was going to say about Amityville 3D is I remember it being on WLVI 56 and the movie Loft. But I talk about a complete Mandela effect. I used to think that the actor that played the writer and the dad, because like Lori Loughlin was in, I think, wasn't Meg Ryan in it too?
Yep. Yeah, she's a friend, I believe.
I just had to look this up tonight, and I was like, for the years, I could have sworn that, like, my memory was like that Dick Van Patten was in that movie.
Dick Van Patten as...
From Eight is Enough. Like, you know...
But who did you think that he was?
I thought he was the main actor in that movie.
Oh, the star of the film?
Yeah, and I was like, no, what the hell? He wasn't even in any of the Emmy films.
No, that would have actually...
That might have been a pretty horrific movie.
Might have made it a better movie.
Yeah.
To have Dick Van Patten. Because I'm not a big Tony Roberts fan. It's like, anything that guy is in, I'm like, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to like... Like, I know he's in Annie Hall. But, you know, I've never really, like, seen him in a lot of stuff that I remember.
I mean, Christopher Walken was in Annie Hall, too, but, you know.
But the thing about these Amityville movies, especially, like, the ones that came along later, after three, I can't remember which one was which. I don't know how many of them you've seen, but to me, they're all just, like, one right after the other, like... I don't know. Like, I don't remember which one was this one. I don't remember which one had this kid. I don't remember who starred in which one. It's just so...
blended?
Yeah. And derivative. One so derivative of the other one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I remember the first three from being, you know, younger just because they were on those iconic Boston stations. But, like, other than... having a good laugh working in a video store many years later, Amityville Dollhouse was the only one that stuck out just because it was like, you know, you'd walk by it and be like, oh, that's kind of stupid.
So I'm taking a look at the list of Amityville films. Mm-hmm. And Amityville 4, The Evil Escapes, stars Patty Duke and Jane Wyatt. And it was written, it's based on the John Jones novel. So he was the guy that wrote the Amityville 2 novelization and then wrote other Amityville books after that. So it's based on a John Jones book, but it was an NBC made for TV movie. And I had no idea that was it. And it's based on the Amityville Horror Returns. So that is the fourth movie rather. The fifth movie is The Amityville Curse, which stars Kim Coates. And that's based on Hans Holzer's book. Then they got into the direct-to-video stuff. Well, actually, Amityville Curse was direct-to-video, too. But then they got into Amityville, It's About Time, Amityville, A New Generation, and Amityville Dollhouse. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it was, where it was like, I don't know. There was like, one of them had like an incestuous side story. You know, there was just some very weird stuff. And then when the Amityville Horror came out in 2005, the remake, that's when it kicked off this whole new batch of, you know, new Amityville. I never even heard of this one, Amityville Playhouse, Amityville Death House, Amityville No Escape, Amityville Evil Never Dies, Amityville Exorcism, Amityville Prison, Amityville, Mount Misery Road, Witches of Amityville Academy. But I do kind of want to see Amityville Vibrator. I'm not going to lie.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
It sounds like a trauma film.
It really does. That was the thing that came to mind. And then Lamone, or was it you that had Lamone on the phone that said, talked about Toxic Avenger? I was like, that sounds like a trauma film.
The idea of if you've never seen like Trauma Beyond,
And Juliet,
yeah, Romeo and Juliet, Poltergeist, like some of their movies are really really like raunchy, and they make Toxic Avenger look like, you know, Casablanca.
Oh yeah, you know what's funny, when Lamone was talking about that movie with Richard Simmons, what came to mind was that movie with Leslie Nielsen and Linda Blair, Repossessed.
Repossessed, yep.
I kind of feel like that was a scene from that movie.
It might have been. That's probably why I'm not seeing anything about it. Yeah. If you've ever seen, you know, if you had HBO in the late 80s, you saw, or early 90s, you saw Repossessed 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And actually, that's where I saw a lot of these Amityville movies was on HBO, like in the early days of HBO. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have, you know, a lot of, they didn't have a lot of offerings. So you would just kind of watch the same things over and over again.
Yep. There was another big movie they used to play was Altered States.
Yep.
Good movie.
I remember the first movie that I ever saw on HBO that was a movie that I wanted to see was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. And then I would just watch that every day because it was on every day. So I would just, like, I'd come home from school and I'd be like, I'm going to see if it's on HBO, and it would be. And I would just watch it again and again. But, yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of great 80s horror that is still out there for people to discover. And I love the fact that Shudder is putting out all these documentaries about it.
Yeah, well, for sure. And especially where they have they have a Tom Savini documentary about his background and everything, and a couple on like Jason and so forth. There's a lot of good content on that platform.
Yeah, I think I pay $3 or $4 a month on my phone bill to get access to it on my T-Mobile bill, and it's
totally worth it.
Yeah, definitely. I'll convince Moniz to get it.
You should, Moniz. You'd be a big fan of it.
Yeah, I'd give it a chance. Yeah,
yeah. I think you get a free trial, so it's worth just watching the free trial anyway.
Would I be able to get it through my regular cable? Like through Comcast?
No, it would have to be something that can like a streaming device.
Well, I have an old PS4.
That should do it.
Okay.
And if it doesn't do it, we'll just get you a Fire Stick. All right, Ross. Well, thanks for the call. Have a good night. Happy New Year.
You too.
Take care.
Ciao.
Bye.
Oh, I just hung up on him again. We will. We can get you a Fire Stick or. You know,
I got, like I said, my PlayStation. I run a number of different other things through that. So,
I mean, do you have a smart TV?
Yeah.
So your smart TV might be able to do it too. Trust me, you will love this thing. Although the you want to jump on the
hard part for me is the ability. Some of these, as you know, I don't deal with banks or other things like that, and they look
right.
You know. I try and pay things through prepaid credit cards, and some of these things don't let you do that, which annoys the hell out of me.
Well, if you want to watch the remastered Phantasm, it's only on until January 8th. Then they're pulling it, so I think January 8th. So you want to
try original?
But the remastered version,
right?
And then they don't have 2 on there, but then they have 3, 4, and 5. Okay. So. The other thing about 80s horror too is I did an episode of Midnight Society where I was talking with I forget the name of their podcast, but it's these two women that review horror stuff, and they wrote a whole book about Stephen King and all that kind of stuff. But you know, there's a big undercurrent right now of people who are trying to keep not only 80s horror alive, but to keep that vibe alive. So they're making new films that feel like they're 80s horror movies. And this was, you know, a lot of people look at it and say, well, of course, Stranger Things made the 80s popular again. Yeah. But this was starting even before Stranger Things, where they're trying, you know, like what was that movie that came out a few years ago? The Void. There's been quite a few of them where they're trying to like keep that same 80s idea alive. Also, another one. Do you have Netflix?
Yes.
So one just came out on Netflix yesterday called The Midnight Sky. With it's George Clooney stars in it.
I saw that last night.
You watched the film?
Yes.
What'd you think of the film?
I think it was actually pretty well done.
I enjoyed it. I thought that it got a little bit slowed down. In the middle.
I kind of figured out who the chick was.
Oh, yeah.
After, you know, I was like, okay, I think I know where this is going.
The part that bothered me, though, was when... Oh, that's my fault. The part that bothered me was when they were trying to get to the lake. Other... Yeah, and it was, like, just going on forever. And I'm like, all right, enough already. Like, you're killing me with this journey. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, when you know, on the scenes of this like whiteout snow, of these blizzards happening in the Arctic Circle, I realized every little black speck or every little like piece of dust, everything that was on my TV screen, I could see it all behind that white background. I was like, oh man, I don't have any of those wipes for your screen. And I was like, oh, so I got to take some home from my office in here. It was so aggravating during that scene. I was like, I can see everything. Like, how long has that dead fly been on my TV?
That was a good flick. I mean, I like the premise. I like the way they did it and stuff like that. But yeah, the middle part did drag
on. It did drag. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in a quick call. Good evening. You're next on Spooky South Coast. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Tim. It's Jim.
Hey, how's it going?
I haven't talked to you guys in forever.
No,
y'all watching 80s music. I mean, 80s horror movies.
Yeah. What stands out for you?
Several. The one I really liked, and I don't know why I liked it, was The Phantasm.
Yep. Right.
I still can't figure out why. But the second and third ones were terrible, I thought. The Amityville ones, I actually met a guy that knew the guy that lived in, I forgot his name, but lived in the house.
The Lutzes?
Of the Amityville. And they had a voice recording one night on an investigation that he had played back that he forgot he had. Which is kind of eerie.
I mean, I have the chance to hang out with Chris Lutz and hear him tell, you know, we were having beers and he was telling stories about the house that were just like fascinating me. Not even the phenomena, but just the day-to-day living in the house. Like hearing what it was actually like inside that house was just incredible.
Yeah, well, that's what this, actually it was Tim Yancey who knew Chris Lutz.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And I guess they were really good friends.
Yeah, they were very close, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We were at, I forget where we were, somewhere in Florida. And he played back a recording he forgot he had on one of his old tapes or recorders. And it was kind of eerie just to hear this guy's voice.
And I can't, as I said, I can't talk too much about the review of the film, but the film has some radio interviews that have not been heard since they originally aired featuring the Lutzes.
I mean, it was interesting. I mean, that was, I guess.
And also Tim Yancey's in the documentary as well, too. So, I think you'll really enjoy it. That comes out January 4th on the Discovery Plus app or the Discovery Plus streaming service. So I recommend giving it a try just to see this documentary.
I will definitely do that.
All right. Well, I hate to cut you short, but we are about out of time.
Just call, say hi to you and Matt and all there, buddy.
Well, and hello to you. Hope everything's well, and happy new year to you. Hopefully we'll get to see you this coming year.
Oh, I hope so. You know how it is. I'm trying to get up that way.
Well, let us know when you do, and we'll make sure we can meet up.
Cool beans. All right.
Take it easy.
See you all later. Bye.
Bye. And we are just about out of time. About a minute left.
Question for you. Do you have Amazon Prime?
I do.
Somebody was talking about the history of time travel. Maybe that's
that sounds very cool. I'll have to look that up. I also watched a great documentary on Prime about the devil in art and like in architecture. Yeah. Like it was really, really fascinating. And I had never had heard of the documentary before. And I just was flipping through stuff on Prime that I was recommending and that came up and it was very, very well done. So that was one of the many things that I watched during the, during lockdown.
Okay.
And that's a whole topic we could do sometime on the show. But that'll do it for tonight. Until next week, everybody, stay spooktacular.